lower your expectations, and put on your comfy pants. You know the ones I'm talking about. It's time for the Mediocrities Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mediocrities Podcast, the only show that lets you step inside one man's brain, walk around for about 30 minutes, and leave shaking your head saying, "Man, that's a lot of movie quotes." I'm your host, Mediocrities. Welcome. Something new, Trivia Night. I have not done a Trivia Night competition in some time, but this week, my wife and I joined some friends for team trivia at a local bar and grill, and we won, and I was excited. Normally, my efforts do not result in victory. I consider myself a pretty trivia kind of guy, but usually do not end up as the complete winner. But we did. The cards fell our way. We made some risky moves, some good point wagers and things like that, and it paid off for us, and we won. So I'm really stoked. And everybody at the table contributed to at least one question. So it's kind of cool that's why I like the team trivia concept. And so if you've never done team trivia before, a couple of things to think about. Normally, every town has at least one place that's doing some kind of a team trivia thing, usually on a weeknight when business is slow for the restaurant or for the bar. And so look for them, ask around. And so it usually doesn't cost anything because they're trying to get butts in the door to buy food, buy drink. So go in, support local businesses, have a beer, have a Coke, have some pizza or whatever, and support your local business while you have a good time, because usually, like I said, the trivia is free. In the team trivia concept, you're at a table, and everybody can kind of pop in. If you know the answer, then, where we were, you wrote it down, but it could be, a speed round where someone's got to run the trivia answer up to the score master's table. But however they organize it, everybody gets to contribute. And even if you're not the trivia person, maybe your spouse is, maybe your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, then take them, because it is a lot of fun, very social. There was a lot of banter between the different teams that were there, so that was kind of fun. And I've also learned that there are roaming bands of trivia teams that know the scheduled nights for trivia nights around town, and they go so they could, kind of dominate the scene. So it's nice when those teams show up and you kind of place well against them, because I see them as the pros. So when you do good against the pros, or you beat the pros, they'll be angry, and maybe they're going to wait for you in the parking lot for a rumble, with sticks and chains, or maybe rocks and switchblades. I don't know however trivia fights go where you live, but we didn't encounter that. We just won, but it was fun to see kind of the regular crowd. And I don't know, this is something that I would like to do more often. So it's fun going on dates with my wife. So I'm hoping that I'll get a chance to do that again real soon. Let's hear from a sponsor real quick, and then we'll get inside my old brain. Now, it is time to journey inside the mind of Mediocrities. It's not always pretty, but it is always real. So join me now, will you? Inside the mind of Mediocrities. Okay, so inside the mind of Mediocrities today is pressure. And I wanted to include that song that Freddie Mercury did with David Bowie, the Under Pressure, but I'm sure that probably cost some kind of royalty money, and I don't have any, so we're not going to do that. But I did want to just kind of talk about that, because it's kind of on my mind, just thinking about, as I watch my kids get old, and this is becoming a common theme, I believe, for me, is just realizing, it's Father's Day and stuff, but just realizing that, I don't know, it's hard to be a dad. it's hard to be, whether you're a biological dad or whether you are kind of filling that dad role in a way, whether it's in your function at work or in the way that you care for a family member or you're mentoring or something, being in that position where you have people depending on you, where you have people needing you for something or looking up for you or feeling the responsibility for those persons. That's what I'm kind of thinking about right now. And, you know, I think about, and moms too, you know, moms are under a lot of pressure. And I know a lot of stay at home, work at home moms, and know a lot of work at home dads actually too, which, you know, you may not think is very common, but actually in this economy, it's very common. A lot of people work from their home, either managing the house or, you know, sometimes in a non-two-income family where you've got a single-income family, somebody stays home and manages all the stuff, and a lot of cottage industries and things develop out of that. So, hey, props for you, for all of you that are trying to make it work and trying to get some stuff done in this world. So just step into the archetype for a father for just a minute, okay? And I know we're talking about archetypes here. This is just kind of a historical roles. But we step into the archetype of a father, and what do we see? We see the provider of food, clothing, shelter, but also love, affection, discipline, education, and spiritual direction. A lot of people don't think about that one. And honestly, guys, a lot of you are kind of giving up this role and just assuming that your wife's going to do it. The parents, that means you and her, are responsible for the spiritual direction of your children. And guess what? The buck stops with you. When Ephesians 5 talks about the husband as the head of the family, we're talking about real things. We're not talking about being the boss of your family. That's not what we're talking about. We are talking about your responsibility. You know, your responsibility as a husband is to love your wife as Christ loved the church. How much did Christ love the church, guys? He gave everything for her. So what does that mean for you? Yeah, you're the boss because the buck stops with you, because you are required to lay down your life. Me, I'm required to lay down my life for my kids, my wife, when I don't feel like it, when I'm tired, when they need something, when they don't think they need something, but they need something. You know, that's what we've got. See, so that's a lot of pressure. And, you know, this, the image of the family, you know, what is the family? The family is showing us what? It's showing us the life of the Trinity. It's showing us the life of what does it look like in the relationship of God the Father to God the Son and God the Holy Spirit, right? It is a complete outpouring of Himself, a complete self-donation. That's what makes this relationship work. And that's hard. Think about it, guys. And I'm thinking about, you know, what if, you know, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, they're a perfect union of persons. They completely give themselves to one another, that relationship of self-donation, that relationship of love, complete love. That is what we're supposed to be imaging in our families. And I am not doing that. I suck at that, guys. And, you know, families, we're broken people. We're trying to fit this image, and this is what we're called to do. And that's why we have to depend so much on God's grace, why we have to depend so much on His love to be able to learn how to do this, how to overcome our desire for, you know, secular things. You know, we call the trinkets and baubles of this world that for whatever reason have a lot of attraction to us. We want those things. We want to be lazy. We want to rest. We want to sit around. We want to, I don't know, just we want to make these decisions that don't benefit your family. You think they benefit you, but really they're only kind of distracting you from the real thing. And it's just hard to live in that kind of a world. And that's, I find myself, you know, being jealous sometimes of people that seem to have it easier than me. People that you look at the struggles that you have in your life, in your relationships, in your work, and, you know, maybe you have some struggles with your kids, and you look at some other families and you think, man, they got it easy. Do they though? Really? You know, how do you know this? How do you know that they have it easy? It's because of what you see on the always honest social media. Yeah. Or is it just the things that they tell you? Maybe they're not telling you everything. Or are you just assuming? You know, we all have a lot of problems. We've all got a lot of issues. We all got a lot of things. And I was told kind of before, you know, if you're in a meeting of families and everybody throws their issues on the table and just lays them all out there for everybody to see, you'd be surprised how quickly everyone scrambles to get their old problems back. Because once you realize the things that the people around you struggle with every day, you kind of realize that, you know, a lot of this stuff's kind of relative. It's the struggles that you have, they're hard struggles, but they're your struggles. And you wouldn't want to take on someone else's struggles, and you wouldn't want someone else to take on yours. Those are things that I'm kind of thinking about just as being a dad and how so hard. And I'm not trying to make this a pity party. I'm not, but Father's Day always reminds me of the ways I fail as a dad. And that is difficult. And it's difficult for a parent to not see the things that they do wrong, you know, and kids are quick to point them out. They'll use those as their reason for, you know, whatever. Well, you know, you let so-and-so do this, or, you know, you did this, yet you're telling me to do this, you hypocrite. You know, these are conversations that happen, you know, and as your kids grow older and they are, and, you know, they become friends and are influenced by other things, they start to do comparisons themselves and say, well, you know, when I'm over at so-and-so's house, I never see their parents argue. I never see them struggle with things. Or, you know, why is it when I come home, it's so stressful? Or why is it when I come home, you know, we have to deal with this? Like, I'm not that dad. And I can pretty much guarantee you that when you're not there, things are a lot different than when you are there. Because that's just the way that humans behave. We want to put on a front and pretend that everything's great. And when we come to church, we want to have smiles on our faces that are usually painted on. When in our hearts, we are hurting. We're all struggling. We're all trying to get through this place. And so if you do have things all figured out, man, would you tell us what is the secret sauce so that we can figure this out? You know, especially those of us, you know, the more kids you have, the more possibility there is for drama. And, but gosh, even with one kid, there's drama. So it doesn't matter if we're being faithful, and whether God blesses us with one child or whether he blesses us with 20 children, the situations that we're allowed to encounter as human beings are ours. They're not for somebody else. They're for us. But what I'm learning, thanks to a little bit of humility, thanks to some gentle encouragement, we'll use that word encouragement, from some people that know a lot more than me, I'm learning to reach out to other dads, to other moms, you know, where we can not commiserate, but share the struggles, share the victories too, so we can rejoice with each other. And the way that we've been able to do that is through a small church community, a small group, and parents, and not everybody has kids, but, you know, we're able to share a faith life and learn and grow together. And so that's been very helpful for me, just finding ways to, I don't know, kind of get out of myself, get my head out of my own behind long enough to realize that there's a world outside of my own brain and to learn. And so here's my thing. If you're a parent right now and you are struggling, you are hurting, I want you to know that you are not the only one. And I don't care how many Instagram posts you look at or how many Facebook things you see when you're not looking at cat videos. Everybody else is not perfect either. And those people that seem to have it so easy, it may be in an area where you are weak. And that's another thing. Since we're inside my brain, I can do what I want. I've noticed this too, that our problems are relative. You know, the person that is operating on a $300,000 a year salary, you know, household salary, is not going to necessarily have the same problems as someone who's struggling with a $30,000 household income. Maybe two completely sets of different problems, two completely different sets of problems. Maybe the person on $30,000 is, they have more financial struggles. but maybe they both have issues with credit card debt. Maybe they both have issues with medical bills that just keep coming. Maybe they both have issues with, you know, difficulties raising children or having children or difficulties getting along. You know, there's all kinds of things that are kind of relative to your situation. Then there are a lot of things that we share. You know, the more I get to know people around the world, and you know, that's kind of thanks to the internet, that the more I realize how different and varied our problems can be, but also how they relate to one another. And that's why the genius of the church is such that rich and poor alike come together. Why? Because we're united in worship of the one God. And we come to receive one God. There's not a rich Eucharist and a poor Eucharist and a middle class Eucharist. There's just Eucharist. And when we receive the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus in the Eucharist, we're receiving that, receiving God himself stooping to give himself to us so that he may draw us, not just to himself, but draw all of us to himself. And that's the fuel, man. That's the fuel that helps us to be that parent, to bear that responsibility, to bear that weight of being a mom, of being a dad, of being an uncle, a grandfather, grandmother, brother, sister, worker, mentor, trainer, spiritual director, deacon, priest, bishop. Every one of us needs that. Jesus said, I'm the vine, you're the branches. It's not the other way around. Jesus is not an appendage. He's not just a part of our lives. He is the source and the summit of our life. If we do not have Jesus flowing through these veins, we're doomed. We're doomed. And the pressures and the struggles that I face, I'm taught, because I know, because I've tasted and seen that this is true time and time and time and time again, that when I completely abandon myself to God, and when I look at, you know, Paul's complaining about his thorn in the side, and he's saying, oh, God, will you just take it away? God, will you just take it away? God, will you just take it away? And he says, no, my grace is sufficient for you. It's enough. I'm here to give you enough. I'm not here to give you ease. I'm not here to give you comfort. I'm here to give you what you need when you need it, and to get to help you. So the struggle is part of salvation. The struggle is part of the Christian life. The struggle that I feel as a dad, you know, and thanks for listening. I'm sitting here kind of thinking through these things, even beyond my show notes here, and just realizing that struggle is making me a better dad. That struggle is going to make me a better man. That struggle is going to help me when my fellow man has the same problem or a problem along the same veins. Not that I can say, dude, I know how you feel, but to say, well, that sounds kind of like something that I experienced, and here's something that helped me. And what that something that helped me usually ends up being is prayer and humility and service, self-donation. And so, you know, my encouragement to you men and women out there, don't ball up. Don't isolate yourselves. Reach out to other men and women, especially men and women of faith that can pray for you, can listen to you, and all of us need to learn how to listen with our ears and not our mouth. Just listen, just give an ear and listen to people. But all of us can do that, can reach out to someone else and help them when they're struggling. And so, you know, I'm praying for all parents, and I especially pray for dads, because that's, I can relate to that best since I am dude. So definitely pray for those, and also for those that are getting ready to get on this train of marriage and family. Folks, it can be scary. It can be very scary. And you think when you're first getting married, man, I remember we thought we were just going to live on love, and that God was just going to, I don't know what we thought was going to happen. But then the bills started showing up, you know, about 3 weeks after the honeymoon. And so, oh yeah, so work. So all the responsibilities that kind of come with being independent of your parents and living on your own. But the one thing that always drew us closer together in our, those lean years, those early years, and even to still to today, God always gets us through the tough times We call out on him. We call out for him. We ask for his help. We pray together. We pray separately. We share our heart with each other, and we don't isolate when we're dealing with stuff. We should find somebody to share them with. Ultimately, you want to share with your spouse. I mean, that's your helpmate. That's the person that God has given you alongside you, you know, to complement you, to bring you through this tough time, to get you to heaven. That's what our spouses are for. And that's what we are for our spouses. So let's listen to each other and help each other and get through these struggles. And newlyweds, just buckle up. Buckle up. And if I can be, you know, as a guy who's been married almost 25 years coming up, I've learned a little bit. And if you ever have some questions about marriage or maybe some things that you're dealing with and you say, you know what, it wouldn't hurt to have one more person praying for me. Would love to hear from you. People that have great marriage advice, love to hear from you as well. And you can always reach out to me on Anchor. You can leave a voicemail for me there if you like. And I do listen to all of them. Thank you very much for doing that. You can also reach me on the Twitter box on at Mediocrities Pod. And you can email me at MediocritiesPodcast@outlook.com. I would love to hear from you. Okay, so we close with something old. And I've been talking about, you know, Chuck E. Cheese. I've been talking about Roadside Kitsch and things like that. You know what I'm missing right now? And I don't even know what got me on the topic this week, but I am missing Dragon's Lair, the video game, Dragon's Lair. Now, I don't know how many of you were playing arcade games in 1983, but I did just a little bit of research on this. Because, you know, research is kind of what I like to do. But in 1983, the brand new top-of-the-line video games were Elevator Action, Pole Position 2. You know, that was a couple of them. Mario Brothers, not Super Mario Brothers. That didn't come out for a couple of years. But Mario Brothers, the one where they're running around jumping up and hitting pipes to make turtles and crabs and stuff fall on their backs. That Mario Brothers and Elevator Action. I want you to think about how boxy those games were. I mean, good grief, Mario Brothers looked smooth and sleek compared to Elevator Action. Everybody looked like a bunch of squares, looked like an Atari game, but man, was that game fun. I love me some Elevator Action. If I ever find that game in an arcade, I guarantee I would drop at least $1 playing that game. But 1983 was the year that Don Bluth helped to create a Laserdisc video game. And so you remember, you might not remember them. I don't know how old you are, but go up and look up Laserdiscs, kids. Laserdiscs were, just think of a CD. I'm sure you know what a CD is. Imagine a CD that is, those were about 12, 14 inch discs, weren't they? They were huge, bigger than a vinyl album. And so those Laserdiscs would go inside of a Laserdisc player, like a humongous CD player, and they would play higher definition films, right? So this was kind of the precursor to the DVD. So these Laserdiscs, and so what Don Bluth did, now Don Bluth was an animator. And so if you have seen An American Tale, if you have seen The Secret of Nim, if you have seen, what's that other one? Anastasia is a Don Bluth movie. This style of animation, very smooth, beautiful animation, very colorful. And so he did a fantasy story about a knight, Dirk the Daring, and saving Princess Daphne from a dragon. And I want to say his name was Smoke, but I can't remember now. Dang it. I have to look it up. Anyway, so you play a cartoon. Now, if you go and Google this, Google Elevator Action, make sure safe mode is on because you don't want any weird stuff coming up, okay? Elevator Action, Pole Position 2, those arcade games, the inventor of Elevator Action, I believe that was Taito, and Atari did Pole Position 2, Pole Position and Pole Position 2. And so if you'll go and look those games up, and just look at the graphics, and then look up Dragon's Lair. and you will see you are playing a cartoon. Now, granted, the controls were a little bit clunky because what this was actually a giant computer inside the arcade cabinet. In fact, it was the first arcade game back when everything was a quarter to play. Dragon's Lair was 2 quarters. In fact, at my showbiz, it was 4 quarters, and there was a line. So it took a lot of money to play this game, and also was a pain in the butt to maintain. The machine would always be out of order. Why? Because it's got a laser disc inside. Those things sucked. Anyway, when you go to play Dragon's Lair, you're playing a cartoon, and so you only had one button. It was the action button. And then you had a multi-directional joystick, so 16 directions. And so 16? I can't do the math. I got to think. So multi-direction, you're looking for a cue on the screen to tell you whether to hit the action button to swing a sword or jump, or to move in a direction to dodge an enemy or a trap. And if you missed, if you didn't hit the thing at the exact right time, then you would get another animated sequence of Dirk dying. And there were about 32 different death animations that they did. And this is hand-drawn animation. This was not real-time computer flowing. So it was really, really earth-shattering technology at the time. And to this day, if I see a Dragon's Lair game, I'll go play it just to go back to just those memories and how cool it was to feel like I was actually playing a cartoon. And there were other games that came out later. Bluth did another one called Space Ace. I think Space Ace might have come out the very next year. It wasn't too long after he did Dragon's Lair. Space Ace was, you know, about a little scrawny kid that becomes Space Ace and defeats the evil, I don't remember the guy's name. But yeah, you can look up Space Ace. But then there were other games that kind of follow the same concept. I can remember playing a game based on Lupin the Third. I think I'm saying that right. It was like, you know, the detective secret agent guy. So kind of cool to play those games, and I miss them. I miss arcades, but definitely miss playing that Dragon's Lair. So if you get a chance to check that out, take a peek and let me know what you think. Hey, one more thing. It was Singe. The dragon's name was Singe. Yeah, cool. Bye.